Welcome to the weekend! This is a Trending Topics Network presentation of Toons Chucks for Friday, or Saturday, depending when I publish it, July 10th, or 11th, depending on when I decide to publish it, 2015. My name is Brian, and I am coming to you live from Toon Studios East here in Youngstown, Ohio, and joining me tonight for the first ever episode of Toons Chucks is the head honcho guy. I'm going to just call him the head honcho guy. He's not actually. He's kind of a co-head honcho guy. But he is known to everybody in the world as Evil Shear. And I mean the world. By world, I mean like entire world. Entire internet. But I know him by his more affectionate name of Paul. What's going on, my man?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We are so excited because Toons and ConstructionUnchucks.com, where you can find all of Paul and Ian and Ryan Noble's stuff, as well as some of my stuff from Toons, actually, can be found. That's ConstructionUnchucks.com. I'm really excited because between Toons and Construction Unchucks, we're going to be able to really kick up some of the podcasting side, as well as some videos and fun stuff like that. We got a lot of stuff planned. Some of the Toons and Trending Topics Network people, though, Paul, might actually not be all that familiar with you, because I know we have some Canadians. We try to maintain at the Trending Topics Network a 40% Canadian ratio, but that never ends up happening, simply because of, like, the Canadian version of the FCC, I guess, requires that there be 40% Canadian content on their television. So we don't know if they're going to expand that to podcasting. But we are kind of short, which is why we brought Ryan Noble along, actually.
Yeah.
but why don't you tell them... Yeah. Why don't you tell everybody at the Trending Topics Network, or hashtag trenders and loonies, exactly what Construction Unchucks is, what it's all about, and why they need to visit ConstructionUnchucks.com every single day?
Well, first of all, I discourage people to visit ConstructionUnchucks.com because I don't think a lot of people can handle what's on there, which is interesting within itself, but what it is, it started off as an online diary, basically, an online journal or an online collection of myself and my brother, Ian Insect, Pittsburgh comedian Ian Insect, and we just put up a lot of stuff. We had a lot of stuff to say. We were writing, we were working on a screenplay at the time, and we just wanted a place to hold it forever. And then it turned into, you know, we loved doing little skits and whatnot, and we started doing, like, little live practical joke type of things, and then we started doing different stuff. We started interviewing cats at a cat shelter. We did one of my favorite projects, Lobster Lobby, the only internet talk show about lobsters, which I believe that you tried out for season 3, and, you know, we never called you back, but
I know, what is with that? Not even a text or anything.
No, Ian came back to life, so it was really weird. He died at the end of season 2 and then came back and hosted season 3. And I was looking to host season 4, so that's pretty exciting. Woods Madness series, the Peanut Butter and Jelly Nightmares. We do all kinds of different series. Over 1,000 videos on YouTube we have, all to waste your time. And yeah. And then we welcome anyone with just a creative flair. We reach out to a lot of different other blogs. You, for example, to just whatever makes you happy creatively, it's just put it out there. It's like Andy Warhol. He wanted all those different artists of different genres around him, so he wanted maximum creative environment around him, and that's hopefully what we're doing, maybe not to his level, but that's what we encourage. It's just creative, no boundaries, art, creativity, whatever you want to call it.
And I think that you hit on one of the major points that I've really been noticing about the internet, and I've harped on it in the past, and maybe the fact that I'm willing to call it harp on it is kind of a sign. But the internet, it's kind of in this world right now where everybody is just so negative, and I cannot stand that. Whether it's current events or whether it's sporting events or whatever it is, everybody wants to take this negative tilt. Just do what makes you happy.
Always.
I mean, even if people don't get your jokes, who cares?
Exactly.
If you make yourself laugh, then you have a much better chance of making other people laugh. And I think it's hard not to really kind of encourage that among people. I really have been shutting the internet down, to be honest, because of some of the negativity. And it's really just irritating when you look at every little thing. I mean, the real tipping point for me, and I hate to dig too deep into current events, but the whole Confederate flag thing, like, I understand people want to get rid of it, and I understand why. But that doesn't mean we should take, like, a show like Dukes of Hazzard that nobody ever had a problem with, ever. Maybe you didn't like the show, but it wasn't because of the Confederate flag and the General Lee, and demand that that show be taken off of television simply because it has a Confederate flag. Nobody ever thought twice about the Confederate flag being on the General Lee. They thought about the cops, the cop chases, the car jumping through barns and things like that, and they thought about Daisy Dukes and her really short shorts and her cool Jeep.
And
that's what you thought about.
Yeah.
And, yes, and you giggled about Cooter's name.
Yes,
that's all.
It's still funny.
Yeah, it still is.
It's 2015, it is still funny.
I would totally go to a mechanic whose name was Cooter, based solely on that television show.
Without a doubt.
So I fail to realize why everybody's got to basically take something, reach to be offended, first off, and then basically eliminate joy from other people's lives because you feel a need to reach to, like, as far as you can to be offended. Screw that. Screw that right to hell. But
yeah,
either way.
I think a lot of people, and just to expand on that, and I know you're trying to move on, but I think a lot of people have their own personal brand on the internet because it's so easy to establish it, and they want to protect it. So therefore, they're very xenophobic when it comes to other people's projects, especially, you know, me and you, or I guess we can call ourselves hockey writers, hockey bloggers, hockey whatever. But we're involved in the hockey universe, and it's like Game of Thrones, where they have the five kingdoms. I think it is five kingdoms, and
yeah,
everyone's just
like that.
There, and
seven.
No one wants
seven
to,
kingdoms.
Seven kingdoms. Well, maybe there's seven, but on the other hand, no one wants to support each other. It's all like their own island, and I think it's very detrimental to creativity. Doesn't make anyone better, but that's the opposite of what Constructs wants to do, and that's the opposite of what we're doing here with Toonstructs, where we're getting together, we're supporting each other's work, and it's great, and hopefully we can get the support of the other, the Toons Network, and we can all expand the network.
Absolutely, and one of the things, and that's what I like about Constructs Nunchucks, even when I don't get your jokes, whatever that joke might be, because the reality is, we're not always going to get everything that everybody else tries to do. We're not. To expect that would be insane.
Mm-mm.
But what I like about it is that it's all in good-spirited fun, and you can tell you guys are having fun with it. And that's what I like. And I think people lose focus that they kind of expect things to completely mesh with them all the time. Don't expect that, people. Your life will be much happier if you don't expect everybody to fall in lockstep with you and with your sensibilities and your humors and everything else. And the thing is, you can find fun in things that you wouldn't typically find fun in if you just open yourself up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about what you guys do, because I don't always get what you do, and I don't always think it's always funny. But you can tell you guys have fun doing it. And that's where the enjoyment is.
Most
I know
is
that my
funny.
Jokes aren't always funny. I know that. But, you know, whatever. I think it's great. And I do. I want to be creative. That's really what we did Toons for. We started Toons. We wanted to have fun. All the way back when we were Morning Toons. And we wanted to be fun. We wanted to be creative. And I think that is where we're actually in lockstep completely with Construx Nunchucks.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we all have nice butts.
Yeah, every single one of us. It's uncanny. Get it?
Yeah, it's our common ground that no matter what happens, mm-hmm. we all have nice butts.
Yeah, it's a good contingency plan.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, when things get rough, that's what you reach for.
Yeah.
You reach for each other's butts.
Absolutely.
That's a Toons tip, by the way. Also, I think it's kind of funny because one of the things that we're doing in the relationship that we're going to have, we were actually, I think with podcasts, you always find out that some of the fun actually comes from the pre-show where you're discussing what's going to happen during the show and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul, before the show started, I actually asked you 8 yes or no questions. Why don't you tell the folks at home what your answers to those 8 yes no questions were?
Sure. It was yes, yes, no, yes, yes, no, no, yes.
I mean, that's just fantastic stuff that mm-hmm. if I went and brought it up, everybody at home would have missed out on it.
No, no. I mean, oh, that was 2 more no's, so you can add that.
Yeah. And so out there, I think that Paul and I think I can speak for both Paul and I, as well as Jack and Ryan, who couldn't be here for various reasons. Jack is actually doing some family stuff and wouldn't be home on time for that tonight. And Ryan Noble is getting his CP buy-in because tomorrow morning he's going to play with Tiger Cubs, mm-hmm. which is awesome.
I'm so mad at him, only for the sake of selfish reasons.
I know. I told my daughter about it, and she's like, she got the biggest, like, wonderment face on. She's like, mm-hmm. how can somebody get the opportunity to play with Tiger Cubs? So I don't know if it matters how old you are. Just having the ability or the opportunity to go play with Tiger Cubs is just an amazing thing.
Yeah, you have to jump on that immediately. That opportunity comes, you take it.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if your kid's graduating from preschool that morning. Mm. You go.
Yeah, just go. No
there
questions.
There will be plenty of other graduations.
They'll graduate all kinds of grades.
but to my other point, just the fun that you can have during the pre-show alone, it's enough for me to encourage everybody. And to speak on behalf of yourself, Paul, and mm-hmm. Jack, and Ryan, go and get your own podcast. Let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
Let us know how the pre-show goes. We're not that interested in your podcast, per se.
No.
We just want to know about the pre-show.
Yeah. Yeah, just do all pre-show. Maybe that should be another section. Just talk about a show that never happens.
Exactly, which would be a great show.
Yeah, just talk about all the great stuff you have coming on and all the guests and the end. I think we just came up with something right then and there.
The Never Beginning Podcast.
Yeah, and just talk about, I think we're giving away too much. Anyone that's actually listening, they might be taking it right now. We'll see it in a few weeks. We're going to leave that for the next pre-show.
Yeah, if we see this on Saturday Night Live, I'm going to have a fit. A literal fit.
Phone calls, yeah.
Well, either way, Paul, what we're going to do right now is we're going to play a little musical bit before we go into our first topic of the evening, which we would love to hear from you about, hear your opinions and all that fun stuff. But before we do that, I should tell everybody how to get a hold of us. First and foremost, if you're going to just get a hold of the show, by all means, mm-hmm. Toons Show, TOONSSHOW is everything you need to know, whether you're on Twitter, where you can, you know, tweet us at Toons Show, or Skype, or you can leave us messages. Toons Show is our ID there. ToonsShow.com, you can actually go and find all the contact information, including our Gmail address, which is at gmail.com. Toons Show, of course. But it's just that easy. Also, if you have a question to ask us, whoever it is, Wolfpack Rules, if you're a wrestling fan mm-hmm. here on Toons Show and Toons Chucks, actually, Just use the hashtag AskToons. I saw nobody was using that, so I grabbed it up. Do that. I'm actually going to change all the information on our website, toonshow.com, to where those questions are displayed right there on the page.
Love
just
it.
Hit us up. Go to Facebook, all that fun stuff. Go to constructsnunchucks.com.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you can't handle it, know your limitations.
You might
want to stretch.
If you want to get a hold of me personally, use your hands.
There. That's all you got to do.
Old fashioned. Use your hands.
Yeah. Use them. And, Chuck's not Chuck's makes the internet hard.
Yes, we do.
But that's all you need to know. And after this brief musical interlude, we will come back with our first topic of the night. Second topic, actually.
Mr. Trouble never hangs around when he hears this mighty sound.
Here I come to save the day.
That means that Mighty Mouse is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, Mighty Mouse will join the fight.
Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Paul and all of his proclivities, let me tell you first off, one of the first things I actually learned about Paul, which I can't even recall how exactly we actually came to be friends. I'm sure
no idea.
Something to do with the parody, Evil Shiro,
maybe.
On Twitter. But one of the first things I learned about you, Paul, was that you have a real affection for one Andy Kaufman.
My goodness, yes I do.
how did this begin? How did your fascination with Andy Kaufman of all people actually start?
I remember, and I think it's one of those stories that if it was less profound, it wouldn't be such a big thing in my life. Where it was a rainy day, it was summer, we were kept inside, we used to go to the swim club every single day, and Comedy Central had I'm From Hollywood, which is a documentary about Andy Kaufman's foray into wrestling towards the end of his career. He forayed into wrestling, and he was the first person ever to take a wrestling angle outside of it just being a sport. He took it to a level of which that we see today, where bad guys say you stink and the good guys say you don't. And the whole documentary was about this big charade he had with Jerry Lawler, which some of you may be familiar with Monday Night Raw. And he went down to Memphis, Tennessee, which is Jerry Lawler's hometown. He was like, I can't say the Elvis of Memphis, because there already was an Elvis of Memphis, but he was big in Memphis. And back then, wrestling was only in territories. It wasn't like it is today, where, WWE goes all over the world. There were little sections. If you lived down south, you liked Memphis wrestling. If you liked, if you lived towards New York, it was Mid-Atlantic. If you lived, PA, New York, on that side, it was WWWF, and so forth. And he went down to Memphis because he was obsessed with, the Playboy Buddy Rogers, which inspired Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair, his characters.
Yes.
He went down and, started, and he was cussing out people, and, well, he didn't cuss out people, but he went down and he said, I want to be a wrestling bad guy because it's so easy. He did it on stage as a comedian, and he went down and he made fun of Jerry Lawler, which is blasphemous at the time, and no one really did it. They're like, who is this guy? And he's from Hollywood. He was on Taxi, which was like the Seinfeld of the 70s. He was huge.
Yes,
he went down and he did lessons about, people using soap. He'd go in the ring and say, this is soap. You need to use this. He'd tell people how to brush their teeth. And, he would slap Lawler and run away. And he had people incensed to the point where he had to hide in public. And it was just so fascinating to me how in character he went. He was very, in Taxi, I'm trying not to veer off too much, but in Taxi, he was this lovable little foreign guy, a character he did stand up early in his career. And he came down and he was just incensed and yelling at people and carrying on like a fool and taking the mic and running around and just causing as much chaos as possible. And the best part is people were paying to see him get his ass kicked. That's good.
And they were
business. Making
hand over fist.
Oh my goodness. It was unreal.
And you have to actually take into consideration that whole aspect. Back then, like you said, there was no good guy, bad guy necessarily in that. So everybody did view it as a sport, and so there was absolutely no inkling that everything was fixed and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And if not for Andy Kaufman, WWE doesn't exist. Especially the way we know it today.
You could make that argument.
But it would never become... Yeah, it's a circus. Mm-hmm. And you consider just over the past 10 years how much had been exposed about wrestling. You consider that whole time period, you're talking like 25, 30 years, that people were buying into it. And a lot of people, the old-timers that followed wrestling, still don't believe that Andy Kaufman was actually working with Jerry Lawler at that point. They actually thought that was legitimately him and just the way he was.
Lawler kept it a secret until after Andy died in 1983. So the whole time, he said it was real. And the big culmination to this feud, which is probably the most famous thing Andy Kaufman ever did, so if you know him, that's probably the one thing you do know of him, is he went on David Letterman with Jerry the King Lawler because... It was this huge TV star. Imagine someone like Ray Romano coming to WWE and just smacking everyone and being a jerk. Like, it was a huge deal. A huge deal where anything that Andy Kaufman did was in the paper. So he went down to this wrestling thing, caused national attention. So David Letterman, who was a friend of Andy throughout his entire career, even Dave let him do the most bizarre things of his career on his show because he just loved it. Got Lawler on the show, and he worked the crowd, and no one knew it was fake. He went on there, and they argued, and it was at the time Jerry Lawler gave him the illegal, at the time, pile driver, so he was in a neck brace, and Andy Kaufman said he was going to sue, and he had lawyers from New York and California, and he was going to sue Lawler for all of his money, and the feud just boiled over where Lawler slapped him right on live TV and knocked him out of his chair, and then Kaufman let out this huge 5-minute profanity-laced tirade on live TV about it, standing on the desk, pounding, causing a big ruckus, came back, threw coffee on Lawler, and they had to just stop, and no one knew. It made national attention. It was hilarious, and no one knew it was fake for years.
And it's fantastic, because, and that's where one of the things, like, you talk about is comedy. And the thing that he was able to do comedically.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at that, and it was so different. Like, it was so different than what everybody was used to. They were used to kind of the awkward, kind of weird and quirky guy.
Mm-hmm.
And you had him coming out as just full-on rage. And I think that's what made him able to pull that whole thing off.
Yeah.
Is he came out, and it wasn't, like, somebody who was trying to be funny.
Mm-mm.
He was coming across as somebody who was pissed.
He hated it.
And it's like, I'm telling you. And it's like, you go back and you watch some of these things and some of the things that he's done, which you can find them all over the internet. All you have to do is type in Google Andy Kaufman, and you can find all this stuff. Just the way he flipped the switch on his character, really, that's pretty much the what they term it in wrestling. You split the script.
Yeah.
He was the guy who invented that because nobody expected that out of him.
No.
And everybody knew that he did crazy things and it was a little bit unstable. But he held on to that anger and that just absurd, over-the-top anger and rage for so long. It was so convincing at it that it was hard not to believe it, especially back then when everything was still...
Mm-hmm.
"Quote unquote real,"
and everyone told him it was going to kill his career, his managers, everyone, his sponsors, Saturday Night Live. He was a regular guest on Saturday Night Live. Taxi. He said, you need to stop it. He'd go on TV, he started wrestling only women. Because he said, men are too big, I can't beat men. So he dubbed himself the intergender wrestling champion of the world and challenged women on stage. And he would be really misogynistic and say things that were way over the top. You know, women should be in there scrubbing potatoes and mopping the floor and taking care of the babies. They can't, you know, my superior man brain is so much better than any woman out there. And he'd wrestle these women and pin them. And eventually he got a good enough winning streak where he said, anyone that can pin me, I'll marry them on the spot and give them $1,000. And then everyone just said it was really offensive because he was very offensive on TV. It was right in the middle of the women's, you know, rights movement in the 70s. And he went completely opposite. And everyone said, this is going to kill your career. But he didn't care. That's what he wanted to do.
Yeah. And it was just fantastic. And in his, I don't know what's more genius, the fact that he was able to pull it off or the fact that he had everything in his favor. Timing and everything mm-hmm. was in his favor. The way he'd set up his entire career. So even though people knew that he was more likely to mess with you and just do these outlandish things, people still bought into it. And that's how you can tell. I mean, the mark of a good salesman is the fact that you know that he's a good salesman and he can still rope you in.
Yeah.
And get you to buy things that you maybe wouldn't buy normally. And that was Andy Kaufman to a T.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about some of the other things that he did outside of wrestling, because his impact on wrestling is obviously felt today.
Mm-hmm.
But his actual comedic career, he did a lot of things on TV.
Yeah.
That he was more than willing to basically risk, like, his entire television career on numerous occasions, whether it was with Taxi or Fridays.
Yeah.
All these shows. What do you think actually motivated him? Because, I mean, he was willing to just destroy the entirety of his career and everybody associated with him mm-hmm. who today would be his posse
yeah.
were dependent on him, and he still went in their faces. What motivated this guy to do the things that he did?
He wanted visceral reactions. He always said, I want people to be happy from the gut. This is almost a direct quote. I don't have it in front of me. Sad from the gut or angry from the gut. That's what he wanted. He wanted a real reaction, whatever it was. And there was limits. He never considered himself a comedian. He said he never told a joke in his life. He called himself a song and dance man. And he never really did stand up. And in all honesty, if you look back at his career on stage, he was always doing something else. He even pioneered the live camera like prank before, what was that popular one in the 80s? Candid Camera. He was doing stuff like that beforehand where he'd carry around a camera and then a tape recorder in his jacket and just screw around with people and get their reaction. But that's what he wanted, real reactions. And it almost became Fight Club-ish at one point where that's the only thing that made him feel alive is getting in these huge confrontations or these huge... He just fed off of it no matter what, and he found out it was a lot easier to make people mad than it was to make people happy.
Yeah. It really is. And he actually used that as a tool,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Because one of the things that you find, it's why trolls today get so much attention, because people find them to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
So long as they're not the target of the troll. And basically, you could say that Andy Kaufman invented trolling.
Yeah, a lot of people.
That's what he did.
Yeah, a lot of people will say that.
I mean, it's just fascinating. And when you look at all the things that he did, you said that you first came to his attention, or he came to your attention, watching a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, I don't know how old you are. You're just a couple years younger than me, I think.
Yeah.
I'm 36.
Yeah.
But I remember whenever I was first allowed to stay up late, I would stay up late and watch Taxi.
Mm-hmm. It was a fun show.
It was. It was a legitimately funny show back then. Like, today, I don't know if I were to sit down and watch it, if I could get into it, but for the time, it was a funny show.
Sitcoms were still funny. Because
you had guys
then.
Like Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
And who was in it? Danny DeVito, Christopher Lloyd.
Judd Hirsch, Tony Danza.
Yeah.
You know, Andy Kaufman, of course. There's another famous guy in there that was a... I forget.
Yeah. There were just so many people. And good quality actors, let alone comedians. But it was always his character, Latka.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Latka, I believe.
Yeah, Latka Babas.
And his... Yeah. Like, it was always one of those things. That, despite all that talent that was around there, you would seem to gravitate towards watching him and what he's doing. And he wasn't even doing anything necessarily weird. It was just quirky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had his own quirks. And that's what I think he brought to nearly every single one of his characters. And that was what was great about Taxi. Not only the star-studded cast, but the fact that you had this low-key foreign dude that was just there. And just being a little bit off. And you understood he was like an immigrant. But it was those little things that he did so well that just brought you to him. Even if you watch the Saturday Night Live thing, which I think is what he's maybe, that pretty much put him on the map for everything.
He was on the very first Saturday Night Live ever.
Yeah. And like, Lorne Michaels was a genius for bringing him on board. Mm-hmm. Because you watch the actual video of the Mighty Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Mighty Mouse presentation. Like, he just looks and he does these little things throughout that whole thing. You think about the actual context of that video. All he did was lip sync 5 words to a song.
And I don't know why it's funny. It is funny.
Yeah.
It's funny to me. I couldn't tell you why it's funny or why I'm gravitated towards it. I can't say, well, it's, you know, some existential thing where you want the underdog to fail, or I don't know, but it's hilarious. I have no idea why it's funny, but it's hilarious.
Mathematically, it makes no sense.
No,
and
it doesn't.
The only thing I could think of is the minutia of his actions during it.
Mm-hmm.
How...
Mm-hmm.
You look at it, he stands there, looks a little bit nervous, and then he sings it, but he doesn't sing it. And everybody's like, what? What is this? And then later, he looks like he's going to do it again because he's just off. And we've all done that.
Yep.
When a new song comes out of something, like, yeah, you're like, I like this song. And then you go to sing the hook, but you're off. You're off by like an entire measure. And you just look like an idiot, especially if you karaoke a lot, which I like to karaoke.
Oh, it's fantastic.
And it's just, that's basically what it was. Everybody could relate to that. And I think that's a subconscious thing to where, like, suddenly that little thing that he did just clicked. Like, oh, my God, I've done that. And you don't consciously think about it. You subconsciously think about it, and it's hilarious. But, yeah. I mean, everything that he did with that little skit, there's, like you said, it just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense why it's funny. It just is. And I think that's a lot of what he did. I mean, he had it down. Now, let's talk about some other things, like maybe Man on the Moon. Because Jim Carrey, I'm a Jim Carrey fan for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say in movies.
Yes.
Man on the Moon was flat out one of my favorites, not even necessarily because of the Andy Kaufman aspect, but just because of how well that movie was done.
So well.
It was one of Jim Carrey's best movies. As far as I'm concerned, one of Paul Giamatti's best movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for anybody who says Sideways, shut up.
Yeah,
shut
Sideways
up.
Is terrible.
Sideways is a horrible movie.
You own it, throw it in the trash.
I know. Get this out of here.
Get it out of your home.
Yeah. Man on the Moon was just so well done. What were your thoughts on that movie as you watched it? Because you were already a pretty big Andy Kaufman fan by that time, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you're watching it, what are you thinking during this whole thing? Did you almost view it as a documentary?
Yeah, it was really, really, really well done. I actually cried. I cry most of the times at the end of it, like during his funeral where he has everyone sing. It was done so well. And I have a funny story about how Jim Carrey got the part. They wanted Tom Cruise. Or no, wait, Tom Hanks? One of the famous ones. One of the famous Toms. That's who won.
Not famous Tom. Tom Arnold?
Tom Arnold, maybe? No, but Jim Carrey, from when he was a teenager, he said, this is what I wanted to do with my life. I loved Andy Kaufman, want to be Andy Kaufman. He worked on it before the movie. Like, as soon as they even said, like, they're writing a script, he started practicing. He studied all his tapes. So his best friend is Bob Zemuda. He writes many of the books, and he's the guy that Paul Giamatti played. It was Bob Zemuda. So he invited Zemuda over, and the studio already settled on, I can't remember, this is bad, Tom Hanks or Tom Cruise. I think it was Tom Cruise, maybe. I don't know how that would work. It was like an A-list actor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say A-list actor. But they were already convinced. He's like, all right, you know, Jim Carrey bugged the hell out of him. He's like, please, 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 please. So he came in to his mansion, and they sat Bob Zemuda down in Jim Carrey's personal movie theater. He just did the Pet Detective movies, and I guess it made him a lot of cash. He had a movie theater in his house. Yeah. And so on the movie theater, they started playing a bunch of old Andy clips and whatnot and getting them comfortable, and Jim made them wait. And it was like an hour and a half. He just kept them in this movie theater, and Bob Zemuda's like, hey, I live this. You know, I don't need to see all these clips. And it was the same, you know, 12 clips over and over and over again of just, you know, his famous parts in his career or whatever. So Jim Carrey comes in and says, sorry, I'm late or whatever. And he comes in and he just does the worst Andy Kaufman impression ever. He just blows it. Just does the worst stuff ever. And Bob's like, I can't believe you made me wait. This is the worst. You know, I understand that you're big now, but, you know, if you treat people like this, you're never going to go anywhere and whatever. And started, you know, he was agitated, ready to go. And right when he was ready to go, he realized the clips he's been watching for an hour and a half was Jim Carrey on the screen. Bob Zemuda, his best friend, didn't know the difference.
That was awesome.
And that's how we got him. And he realized that's such an Andy move to keep him waiting on purpose, get him pissed, blow it on purpose, and then flip it on him. He's like, oh, my God. So they fought the studios and said Jim Carrey has to do it or it's not getting made.
Which is awesome. It's an incredible story, and it's very Andy Kaufman itself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you consider it, I mean, that's exactly the kind of thing that Andy Kaufman would do.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's out there doing his own alter egos and everything else with Tony Clifton.
Yes.
So Jim Carrey doing that was so appropriate.
Yeah, I read that in the latest book. It was The Truth, Finally. It was just one of the side stories. I've read most of the books, but... yeah, that was just funny, and there's a bunch of, there's about 12 hours worth of footage that they filmed Jim Carrey being in character for Man of the Moon. It was like a documentary of the making of Man of the Moon that Jim Carrey won't release for whatever reason he has. So it exists, him being Andy Kaufman, because he was Andy Kaufman 24/7 from day one of shooting to the end.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome, and I guess they call it method acting.
Yeah.
Joaquin Phoenix does the same sort of thing whenever he does things. Some guys just can do that. I don't understand how they can do it. I could never do it, but then that's not my profession.
Mm-hmm.
But you almost get the inkling that that is something that Andy Kaufman did every single day of his life.
Yeah, you can argue who was the real Andy.
Yeah.
He was always putting on.
Does anybody actually know Andy Kaufman? Is I guess the question that I would pose because of that. Because, I mean, he was constantly pulling the wool over people's eyes. Even his best friends. Like, I've not actually read any interviews or anything like that, but have any of them said, Like, I'm not even sure who the guy was.
Yeah, the most recent book was co-written by Bob Zamuda's best friend and the love of his life, his last girlfriend, Lynn Margulis. And they both wrote that even when he died, and this is a well-known thing, they kind of downplayed it in the movie, but they had to force people to come to his funeral because everyone thought it wasn't real. They thought, this is Andy's next thing. He's casually joked about to his inner closest friends that he was going to fake his own death. His parents didn't want to come because they knew they were devastated. And they thought if they were being put on, that would be his last joke. But his funeral was massively underattended. I'm talking like barely a full room for a celebrity. Because everyone just thought, oh, it's him being him. So they had his closest friends not knowing what he was going to do, how far he was going to go. Even his best friend Bob Zamuda, who's written a couple books on him, a lot of books on him, maybe all the books on him. You can always tell, like, he just never knew. He never knew they'd be eating dinner at a Denny's and he'd start a fight with a stranger for no reason, just to do it. You know?
Yeah. And it wouldn't be too far of a reach, really.
Yeah.
The story is, the official story, we'll call it,
mm-hmm.
That he died of lung cancer in 1983, mm-hmm. or
1984. Was it 83 or 84? Maybe 84. I think I said 83 earlier, but I'm probably wrong. I think 84.
Yeah. Either way, he did die of lung cancer, officially,
mm-hmm.
after making the jokes about pulling the ultimate prank and faking his own death.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of questions as to whether that exists, and that's one of the biggest reasons. And I had texted Jack earlier to find out if he was going to be on, because he loves conspiracy theories.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing that Jack loves, it's conspiracy theories.
This is a good one.
And I kind of wanted to get his opinion. But since he can't be here, we'll discuss it. What's your opinion? I mean, do you think that he'll eventually surface?
I think if he would have done it, he would have done it by now. There's a lot of opportunities. There's in the latest book, The Truth Finally, and I'm not selling it. I've mentioned it a ton of times, but it's a good reference point. But in that book, Bob Zamuda comes out and says, yes, he faked his death. Yes, I knew how he did it. And he wrote a chapter to Andy saying, please come back. Your friends miss you. I know you're reading this, you know, there's a lot of opportunities, think of the money we can make, I will have everything set up for you, and he's just basically pleading to his old friend, that's the only way we can get a hold of him, is like, please, you know, come back. But as far as what I think, I don't know, I think it's within his realm of doing it, and I think once Andy Kaufman never really liked fame, but he knew it was a vehicle for him to do whatever he wanted. He did not like Taxi, but someone convinced him that this was a vehicle for him to further his career in weird ways and can finance all kinds of stuff and basically run roughshod and do whatever he wanted. And maybe he got away from that life and decided, you know, it's not what I want anymore. And after 30 years, maybe the shine of fame wears off, and it's been 30 years, I think, exactly, almost, pretty closely, May of 84, I think it was, but I don't know, it's tough to tell. I like being optimistic, I like reading little blips when he comes back. Every 5 years, you always hear something crazy about him not being dead, and they had some girl come on, I think it was 2 years ago on the Andy Kaufman annual charity event. They do what was it? The Comedy Foundation he founded with the other comedians, with Robin Williams and all those other guys way back in the day. Last comic. I don't know. He founded a charity. They still did the event, and some girl came on saying it was his daughter, and Andy's still alive, and it causes big stink. And then the girl claimed that, you know, it wasn't his daughter, but she was sent by someone, and she wouldn't give it up. So that's, like, the last mm-hmm. thing that we heard. And I always thought he would have came back for, like, the last David Letterman. Him and David Letterman were always fun. You know, David Letterman gave him all the time and freedom and creative space to do whatever he wanted on a show. But
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he's just living life. Maybe not. There's a lot
maybe.
That, that book had an elaborate scheme about how he had he found a body double when he went out to do that psychic medicine. He brought someone back with him that was a body double that only had a couple of weeks to live, and he was fasting just for that sake, so he looked sickly and swapped them out, and he said the corpse wasn't real. He says he knew the corpse wasn't real. Bob Zemuda did, and I don't know. I don't know if he's losing his mind or if there are true facts that we just... It's definitely bizarre. I'd love to know the real answer one day.
Yeah, I think where it muddies the waters is the fact that he never came across like he was doing it for money. Kind of like you said, money was more of a means to an end as opposed to the end, which is not how most people in show business actually operate.
No, he did just real quick, he did this horrible movie called Heart Beeps, where he was a robot that found true love with another robot. And he knew it was going to be terrible, the script was awful, but for whatever reason, they gave him a ton of money, which didn't make sense to me at the time because his career was out of control at the time. He was wrestling and he was worthless in Hollywood anymore. But they offered him a ton of money to do it, and he did it only for the fact that he can fund a documentary called Breakfast with Blassie, where he just had breakfast with Classy Freddie Blassie at a diner, and all he does is him and Freddie Blassie are talking for about an hour, and they're being... These girls next to him notice him, and they're just being dicks to him to make him upset, and they're shooting the shit about people and life, and that's what he wanted to do. That was his last project.
Mm-hmm.
But he did that to do that.
And that's where, I have a hard time believing the conspiracy that he is still alive.
Yeah.
Because somebody doesn't... I mean, if somebody would, it would be him, but... People don't just disappear, especially in this day and age. There's too much of a trail that you need to have. And outside of him going to Botswana, wherever it is that he was rumored to go for help in Africa, it's not feasible. It's simply not.
I always thought he went away, he did fake his death, but then he actually died by accident. Like he... passed away from other things, or because he was incredibly healthy. There's no reason he should die from lung cancer. He never smoked. No, I lied. He smoked for Tony Clifton, but he was a vegetarian. He meditated. He did body cleanses all the time. He went to retreats. He was extraordinarily healthy. He lifted weights all the time. He wasn't a smoker. He wasn't a drinker, unless he was Tony Clifton. Yeah. That was only for the times he was playing Tony Clifton.
Yeah,
so I don't know. And the only big thing that sticks out to me is that when they wrote a script for the Tony Clifton movie, they had Tony Clifton die on the same date in the same hospital the same way. And it was written 2 years before his actual death.
Really?
Yes.
See, that's one I didn't know.
Yes.
That's insane.
Yeah, and it's nuts. It's
either
the same
way.
Hospital. It's a famous Hollywood hospital, which wouldn't make sense. He was born in Long Island. He had a choice of any hospital to go to. He went to some prestigious Hollywood hospital to die. It's not like him at all. He actually switched hotel rooms. If they were too noisy, he would just leave. He would ask for the quietest hotel. He wouldn't want to be bothered. He wasn't like a people magnet. So some make
that
sense, some do. Yeah.
See, you could be convincing me to believe it.
There's that little thing of doubt that just makes you, and then me being so hopeful that someone like that's still on this planet and will maybe come back and do something amazing. I mean, how do you fake your death for 30 years and come back and be like, you know, joke's on you guys? That would just be insane. I couldn't even conceive it in my little tiny uncreative mind. I can't conceive anyone doing that. But it would be just the biggest prank of all time. All time.
Yeah. It really would be, and you consider, at this point, though, people would be like, he'd come out, and he'd be like, I'm Andy Kaufman, and people would be like, who? Who are you? What?
Why should I care?
I mean, because you consider at this point, he'd be 65 years old, 66 years old.
Yeah, I think so.
66 years old. And it would just be kind of weird, because he'd show up, he'd be this old man, and be like, aren't I a genius? And everybody would be like, shut up. And
what
that
did
would
you
be
do?
Pretty
I
much
faked
how...
death. That's a dick move. Why would you do that?
Yeah, and then he'd be completely delegitimized because he'd have to go on, like, Maury Povich and have a lie detector.
Yeah.
And just to prove that it was actually him. And nobody would really care because everybody who was of an age to really appreciate him back then at this point has too many things going on in their lives to actually give two rips.
Yeah.
Which maybe that would be the ultimate part of the joke.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he didn't like the limelight. When he would get overwhelmed, he would disappear from Taxi. Like, disappear, not show up to call. And he would just get himself a job. One time he was a busboy. He just, like, left and got himself a busboy job at a deli. And they're like, where's Andy? And someone was eating there. And they're like, oh, Andy Kaufman's busing at this deli across the street. Didn't tell anyone. Got a legit job. W-2s, everything. And we just bust tables. He was just weird like that. He left a million-dollar job to make minimum wage at a deli because he just wanted to. I don't know. He just did what he wanted at all times.
And the reality is we all want that for ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Just to have that ability. Just to say, F you, I'm out of here for a while, and then you just disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back. I would die for that kind of freedom. But, yeah, anything else you'd like to add before we move on to our third topic of the night?
That's just the tip of the iceberg. I'm afraid to get going anymore on them. There's so much to learn about them. If you're interested in comedy, if you're interested in just messing with people, if you're interested in conspiracy theories, good stories, performance art, just anything, he's such a great resource. If you haven't heard of him, you're doing yourself a massive disservice. I mean, the guy's body of work is just... He used to lip sync to Mighty Mouse. He used to play the bongos. He used to do Elvis impressions. He used to do, at Carnegie Hall, he had some old lady come on the stage and dance and then fake a heart attack, a real one, where they had the paramedics come in and had everyone freak out. And then he brought her back from the dead with voodoo magic. He took everyone out after that show for milk and cookies and buses. He wrestled women. He wrestled men. He did everything. He did one where he did a tour called Eating Ice Cream, where all he would do is go across America to colleges and eat ice cream from a bowl for 20 minutes and then leave. He did laundry once. I remember in one of his books, Ellen DeGeneres, remember seeing him back when she was a kid, and he just did laundry on stage, folded it all, did laundry, folded it all, and just left. And people loved it. They didn't know why it was funny, but it was funny, and he just did what he wanted.
Yeah, he was cut from a different cloth.
He really was.
Is what my grandmother would say. it's just craziness. I don't know. But, check him out. If you're not that familiar with him, do yourself a favor. Check him out, because you will seriously end up probably with more questions than answers once you start to dig into it.
And that's the best.
And trust me, it was by Andy Kaufman's own design that you would do so.
Absolutely.
So when we come back, we're going to go into our third topic of the evening, which is another thing that is near and dear to Paul's heart. So we're going to touch on just a story that he alerted me to just this past week, as a matter of fact. He's Paul. I'm Brian. And you're listening to Toons Chucks right here on the Trending Topics Network and toonshow.com and constructiononchucks.com and trendingtopicsnetwork.com. My name is Brian, and this is a message for all my middle school-aged friends. As you may have heard, I am running for president, and I'll need your help to make it happen. I understand your struggle. School is tough, and as president, I will work to make it just a little bit easier for you. How? By starting with U.S. geography. I mean, what is the importance of memorizing all those state capitals? It's malarkey. I mean, that's why I will rename every state capital. For you. Carson City will become Nevada City. Raleigh will be North Carolina City. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania City. Albany, New York City. Well, New York. You know, I'm still working on some of the details, but you get the point. I just need you to convince your parents that I am totally the right guy for the job. Together, we can do this. My name is Brian, and I approve this message. Running for president. Just figured that we might as well just announce that right here on Tunes Chucks.
I heard your platform, and I love it. I'm full support. I don't think you're in your I'm in your voting demographic, though, but if you'll take my vote, you have it.
I figure the way we got to look at things is kids are spoiled today by their parents.
Yes.
And as such, if you can rope in the kids, eventually they'll rope in their parents.
That's why every kid has an iPad. It's your fault, parents. Not Brian's. Not Brian's fault.
That's right. It's not about the issues.
Mm-mm.
It's about the demographics.
Absolutely.
As we were setting up this show here this week, Paul, you started this awesome series that I actually threw out there. It's one of the things that we can discuss this week and may very well become a Tunes regular segment in all actuality as well. Because both on Tuneshow.com and ConstructionOnChucks.com, which if you'll recall, Paul vehemently suggests that you don't visit because it might not be, might not be able to handle it.
We don't even want your traffic. We have enough. Stay off the site. Don't even go there.
But, Japanese culture, which you have really been diving into lately on both ConstructionOnChucks.com and Tuneshow.com, with the series that you have actually very appropriately named Shit Japan's. Which
I love your tone. I'll say it.
Of all the names of segments and whatnot that you could possibly come up with, that one really hit home for me. Shit, listeners, soak it in. Shit, Japan's. It's the greatest series title ever. But basically what you focus on is Japanese culture as a whole, because the Japanese are weird, which we'll discuss a little bit later. But you sent me an article this week. Because Tunes Game Time, we talk about video games and video game culture and all that kind of fun stuff. And this one has a lot to do with the video games, and I'll just let you break that story if you have it up and ready.
I don't have it up and ready, but I guess... Actually, if you want to take the lead on that, I read it when I sent it, and I don't know if you have it up in front of you, but you'd probably be better.
That's all right. I have it up on my thing. So I'll just read from it, if you wish.
Yes.
Because the Japanese are batshit crazy about everything. And then we'll dive into a little bit about why that is here in a second. But according to Metro.com... Actually, it's not Metro.com because it's in the UK. And the UK has to be special. That's why they have people like Only One Mart. You can find on Twitter. Mart, our friend over there. That's how you can tell they're a little bit different over in the UK. But Metro.co.uk is the name of the website. They had a special that says, say hello to this creeple virtual sex assault game in Japan where you can grope breasts. Yes, this is a Dateline someplace in Japan. Where the article starts out, we have become used to weird sexual activity from the islands of Japan, but this new video game definitely raises alarm bells. Agreed.
Yeah.
Using the virtual game set Oculus Rift, a video game developer has created a game where users can grope a young woman's breast. The programmed reaction of the girl suggests assault, as it shows the girl's body language is unhappy and acts defensively when one or both of her breasts are grabbed. An added creep bonus is the interactive prosthetic boob simulator that comes with the game. It is due to be demoed at Japan's Oculus Rift Festival, but don't expect non-perverted people to be very impressed. What the ever-living fuck?
I love how they give them, or they help develop this Oculus Rift, for those who don't know, is a virtual reality headset. It's getting ready for, you know, North American launch. They have some games out. But it's virtual reality. It's not 80s virtual reality. It's not that weird 90s virtual reality. I guess it's this generation's. And from things I've seen, look really, really good. Very immersive, and they have it where it's not too awkward anymore, but they get this glorious opportunity with limitless possibilities, and they turn it into that, and it seems like they always do that. They take everything nice, and they do something really cool, but then, like, there's a sub-slice of that culture that's just like, add tits, you know? Like, we found a way to, you know, capsulize food, make them tits. We found a talking refrigerator, give them tits. You know, we hybrid goat cow to produce a weird milk, give it tits. They never stop.
And Dennis Leary actually famously, or maybe infamously, said on his Locked and Loaded CD, and yeah, I know that off by heart because I listened to it so many times, that we could really stop war, if we just flew Zeppelins over the battlefields that were just painted like tits.
Yeah.
Everybody would be willing to kill each other. Then they'd be like, whoa, look at the tits.
Yeah.
Look at them. There they are. Everybody would stop and look. But Japan, you're absolutely right. No matter what it is, they find a way to completely twist and pervert it into something just completely bizarre. Sexual most times. And other times, just weird.
Yeah, they take that left turn. They take a good concept, and then there's that one subculture of a subculture that takes that sharp left and just makes something completely weird. And it's endearing to a point, but it's like, at what point do we stop expecting it from them? With this Oculus Rift, it's like one of the first four things that they did with it was make a tit grabbing simulator.
And it makes you wonder, how long did it take them? How long did it take them to come up with this idea?
I'm saying 12
seconds. I know. I'm like, of all the things, everybody's like, man, we could use something like this for, now, like here in America and places like probably, I would assume, maybe China, maybe, I don't know, like in the Middle East, they were like, this could be a great tool to teach open-heart surgeons. And Japan's like, boobs!
boobs
over here! And it's like, of all the things that they can come up with, that's what they do.
That's on their short list. It's like Mario, boobs, and then RPG that no one can understand. And then robots. Yeah. It's like on their short list. Like, all right, yeah. We got Mario, and then boobs, RPG, robots. Okay, we're cool.
Yeah.
It's called
Call of Duty. Yep. You're gonna get Call of Duty on this thing, and then the Japanese are just like, nope. Nope, we know what this shit's for. It's for boobs.
They do that constantly.
Now, here's the thing. I kind of, when I read this article, I want to laugh, and I want to say it's straight-up Japanese. But as I think about it, the Japanese aren't the only people to totally twist and pervert things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think back, all the way back, I'm going to ask you to jump in your Toons Chuck's time machine.
I'm already in
all
there.
The way back to when, who was it, Thomas Edison? mm-hmm. came out with the first video camera, and one of the very first videos they made was actually a porn.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is completely unusual and outside of the bounds of humanity to happen.
No, it's definitely natural, but they're not the only, but they're the first, I would say, in most cases.
But the Japanese now, no matter what the technology is, no matter what the subject matter is, they find a way. They find a way to not only think about it like a drunken fool would do around a bonfire, but they make it happen.
They do. It's like we created a light bulb that'll last 50 years, and the other guy's like, that's cool, but can you bang it? No? All right. No, let's just forget about it then. That's their
and that, ladies and gentlemen, is why the refrigerator bulbs are long and tube and cylindrical instead of like a bulb.
Yeah, because you can bang them.
Oh, goodness gracious. It's got to look like a dick.
No, we took that left turn. We took that left turn.
That's right. And recessed light bulbs.
Yes.
Put them on their end, kind of look a little bit like a breast implant.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't even know. The Japanese are crazy, and this is just yet another example. You think about all the different things that they do. They're coming out with sex robots. Mm-hmm. We'd be happy with a robot that could defuse bombs.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, hell no, we want it to simulate a blowjob. Which I think in Japan, blowjobs are still illegal.
I don't know.
I have no idea. But this is the kind of things they're doing in Japan, which is just weird. But if you actually look at the picture, did you watch the video in this article?
Yeah. It's something else. It's so weird, and the guy's like has no problem with it.
And he looks completely content to be playing this game. He's like, yeah. There's a cardboard cutout. Yeah, there's a cardboard cutout, and it has, like, literal boobs
mm-hmm.
that he's reaching out and touching.
They're in a maid's uniform, though, so it's not...
Yeah, and that would be one thing. But the fact that they made... Okay. The Japanese are into some weird...
He's just overloaded right now.
We're just going to... It's going to be us just saying that statement like 20 minutes. They're into weird shit. The main thing... Why are you going to make it... it's a way that the girl in the game... is completely 100% against this activity. And you're like, fuck it, I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, do it. Yeah. I don't know. It's something that they like. I did that that one game I did for Toons and Constructs, the Houchi play, where you creep on girls and you try and touch their butts, and it has to be against their will. It must be something that they like, where it's taboo, and it gives it a little extra thrill, I guess, which maybe for them is socially acceptable, but it's everything I've learned my whole life. That's wrong. You don't do that to people.
Yeah.
Keep your hands to yourself. I've been, you know, they were telling me that ever since I was 1 year old. Keep your hands to yourself.
And then you kind of, just under that basic concept, because I completely agree, keep your hands to yourself, that's all. These are virtual hands.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, because I'm totally against the whole thing where anytime like a shooting or something like that happens, they blame video games. I'm totally mm-hmm. against that. But in a way, there is like a desensitization that does happen. The more you see something, then the more it becomes an acceptable behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of wonder about that with this. But
do you think it's like a sexual assault loophole that they found?
Yeah. And it's just bizarre. And, like, I am completely against internet feminism now.
Yeah.
And the internet feminist movement that's coming, the social justice warrior. But if they brought this up as a valid point as to why guys can be shitheads, I would kind of be like,
Yeah.
You got me. I don't know. I have no retort. Yeah. And I don't know. Should there be sanctions put on Japanese and technology? Because that's the one thing that we allowed them after World War II. We took everything away from them except technology.
Yeah. I don't know what to say. I don't think they should be sanctioned at all. I think let them do whatever they want. If we don't like it, just like what was that game, Hatred, that we talked about last time. If don't like it, don't look at it, and it goes away. If it's shitty, it goes away.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Just look at Leisure Suit Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Sophomore fun, but you don't find it anymore because they went out of business.
Yeah, it was a shitty game, so it went away. No one bought it.
It was. It really was.
It was really bad.
yeah, and I don't know. This has me so confused and perplexed. Kind of looking at it, why do you think the Japanese are like this, in all honesty? I have a couple theories, but I'd like to hear yours.
I hate to make generalizations about the culture, because I'm sure every section has different cultures, and I'm sure we don't have any Japanese listeners, or not yet anyways. And
not yet.
If we do, by all means. Yeah, hit me up, tell me I'm wrong. But they are such a culture of hard work and respect and seriousness, and then they have, when you're repressed with that, I mean, your idea is to, you know, wake up, exercise, eat, you know, sensibly, go to work for 12 hours as a salary man, you know, come back, eat dinner, exercise. Like, they do a lot of exercise there. They exercise at work and whatnot. Go to bed, the end. And I think after that routine for a while, you start losing your mind a little bit, and you get this little dark side, so you can't really express yourself. It's not like us where we're doing whatever and, you know, we're tweeting every single move and we're Instagramming and everything. They have a very serious society, and there's a lot of rules, and there's a lot of expectations, and there's a lot of pressure, especially when you're younger, to succeed. And I think it's just you push and push and push and push, and you can only push so far before there's a little give back. And they're not a violent people, and their big pushback is just disrupting social norms. That's their rebellion. You know, they're not going to commit crimes because that's just not how they're programmed. They're not going to punch people. They're not going to go to sporting events and get drunk and fight people. They don't go to concerts, get drunk and fight people. Like how we blow off steam. All their holidays aren't about drinking and overeating. Like, they just need a way to blow off steam, and I think this is a good way to do it.
Yeah. And because I think you hit on a lot of great points, because a lot of the points that you bring up are what is so great about Japanese culture.
Mm-hmm.
There is a huge variety of it. One of the things that I have a theory on is that what you see in Japan is just different.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of the reasons that you actually brought up. But what we see there, compared to what we see in the United States, is you have like a statistical bell curve where the only things that, like, you've got the majority of people who fall in that middle section in the United States when you talk about cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the fringe things, which everybody seems to know a little bit about, but only a few people are in that. Well, in Japan, it seems to me like the bell curve is sort of inverted. It's where you either have the older generations that are very traditional and very strict and very hardworking, and then you have the activities of the younger people that haven't gotten to that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
So where they are, like, super conservative, I'll say, which I hate using that word because everybody links it politically.
Mm-hmm.
But the younger generations are just so, so over-the-top expressive, so unabashedly just out there and free with their thinking and everything, that they just go to this complete extreme, and it's almost like how we have rebellious teenagers in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But their rebellion is just over the top. And I think it has to do, and I'll say my two theories. first one rooted around that, which is the samurai culture and the counter-samurai culture that goes along with that, to where if you're going to rebel, you rebel completely to an opposite extreme. Here in this country, we don't... I don't want to say we don't value hard work, but we value, for the most part, a pretty good balance between work and play and the importance of both.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, a rebellion, what are you going to rebel against? You're only going to rebel against, at most, half of our daily life. And if you're a teenager, you rebel against your parents, who also want to do fun things a majority of time, so you're only really kind of rebelling against half, at most, of what your parents go for.
Mm.
Where the older generations in Japan are very, very to it, they're, like you said, very work-oriented, very hard-driven. And so the teenagers there have to rebel kind of equal and opposite to an extreme. And this is the kind of thing you end up with. My second theory, first one being samurai and counter-samurai. My second theory is the bomb. When World War II happened, Nagasaki and Hiroshima, we just completely messed with them in such a bad way that their entire world was flipped on its head, and as such, they don't know exactly what to do with themselves, but they know that they find comfort in tits.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it.
Yeah. How can you blame them?
And here's the other thing, because I'm kind of disturbed now as we think about the video games and the way they make everything sexual. You know those things that you drive around and you'll see in people's, like, front gardens?
Yeah.
The wooden plaques that are, like, old ladies bent over
with
their red butts up in the air?
Yeah.
Is it possible that Mario, when he hits the block and the mushroom comes up, that we're not looking at a mushroom at all, but we're looking at a little old lady butt come up?
Hmm. I'm willing to accept that as fact. I'm okay with that.
I mean, he lays pipe.
Yeah.
He partakes in mushrooms and things like that. He jumps on the little brown triangles.
Hmm.
Koopas.
Yes.
So they have brown eyes, I'm assuming. This is just the Japanese thing. I'm not talking about my own thing. I'm just throwing some theories out there. Spaghetti testing. It's very possible that the whole time we've fallen in love with Mario and Luigi, they could have been like massive pervs the entire time.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it.
Who knows? Who knows? And did we ever know how Donkey Kong actually ended?
No.
Was there some monkey love or anything like that involved?
There is hearts involved.
It's very possible.
Well, we'll get all
right,
that.
But what do we have to look forward to? Because, I mean, if everybody goes to constructionunchecks.com and teenshare.com, where you can type into your Google machine, shit, Japants, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You'll be directly linked to those things. Of all the articles that you've come across for the Shit Your Pants articles, what has been your favorite, and what should people check out first? And then maybe what can we actually look forward to? Do you have any more really coming down the pike?
Oh, my goodness. I have a whole notebook full of just things. And I know about them, but I don't know completely about them. And I want to, if I'm going to say this is present anything, I want to at least have a good understanding of it. Probably Takahashi's Challenge is probably my favorite, because it was a video game made by someone who hates video games and hates people and was just a mean-spirited drunk. And I take everyone through it step by step. I thought it was the best way to describe the game, because you can't really describe it, how to beat the game.
from top to bottom, and just the steps you have to take is, I don't know how anyone did it, anybody at all. And I don't know, this Sunrise, it's a game that's completely impossible. There's no plan on anyone winning. He hated it. I don't know if you wanted me to go into more detail. There's something that you're reading on that you wanted me to elaborate on.
It was legitimately created by a person who hates you.
Yeah.
I think this is the best way to describe that game.
And yeah, he hates you. I mean, there's a point, I won't go through the whole thing because we'll be here another half hour, but there's a point in the game where you get a map, and it's what you're looking for the whole game. And it's a blank piece of paper. And this is after you sing karaoke into a Super Famicom controller 3 times, beat the shit out of an old man, and take his map. There's no other way to do it. You can't buy a map. You have to pound the shit out of him at a karaoke bar and take this piece of paper. And your options are to burn it, in which you would lose the game and start over. You can let it sit in water. You can let it sit in sunlight, or I forget what the fourth option is. But if you choose to let it sit in sunlight, you have to leave your controller alone and your Super Famicom on for an hour. Not touch it. If you touch it, game over. If you want to soak it in water, you have to let it soak in water no less than 3, but no more than 5 minutes, and then scream into the controller for it to work. I don't know how that makes sense, but that's what you gotta do.
People would be like, were you high when you made this game? And you'd have to answer no, because that would require a level of sadisticness that you could not, like, actually maintain if you were just high.
Yeah, and you go through all these insane challenges that make zero sense and no linear logic on how to complete this game. Meanwhile, in this game, you must get divorced, you must lose your job, and you must get drunk. You have to. You can't. And there's an option where you can beat up your wife and children because you come home late. And then she wants a divorce, and you get a chance. They give you a shot where she says, you're out too late drinking. I want a divorce. And you get the option to pound the shit out of everyone in the house and leave. You can't complete the game, but it's an option. And this guy is just...
Man.
I read more and more about it. I tried to get as much info, but he came to every production meeting, just didn't give a shit. He was drunk all the time. He just didn't care, but he was such a popular figure in Japan at the time, where it was just putting... I don't know why they give him such creative input. It's like Tony Hawk skateboarding. It was like Takahashi's challenge, beat Takahashi. He was a famous comedian. So I don't know. I don't know. But it's probably the most insane video game I've ever heard of.
Which is awesome. And it's just yet another example of how screwed up and twisted Japan is. So if you've not actually partaken in Shit Your Pants, do it, because it'll make you shit your pants.
Yeah.
In laughter or misery, depending on how personally you take Japan.
Yeah.
And their activities.
And if you shit in misery, if you get really sad, you just shit.
Yeah.
That's up to your doctor to determine, not you. So.
That's right.
Let's leave us out
That's
of this.
That's right. Yeah, we're not here in the business of diagnosing the problems.
No.
We're just here to let you know about them. Either way, Paul, it's been a ton of fun. And just, we'll let everybody know once again where we can find everybody involved, actually, with Tunes and Tuneshow.com.
Mm-hmm.
I'll start with the two guys that aren't here. Jack, who you can find on Twitter at ToonsJack, and Ryan Noble, who you can find at RyanNoble66 on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we got a whole bunch of friends out there who mostly join me on Tunes Game Time. Which, by the way, I will be recording probably tomorrow or Sunday.
Cool.
And have it published on Sunday, so we'll return to that. But then there's us. So why don't you go ahead, tell everybody where they can find you, and then I'll go.
I am all over the interwebs. I am at evil_Shiro on the Twitter box. I am at ConstructsNunchucks. I am at Penn's Initiative. I am at ConstructsPaul, which is a very unuseful Twitter handle I have so far. Also on ConstructsNunchucks, you can see me on Toons, on Penn's Initiative. Geez, anywhere. Just, I don't know.
It's safe to say you are the internet.
If you see me on the street, say hi, give me a hug. I'm cool with that. The old-fashioned way, the analog way of meeting people.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing a kickball tournament in like a month.
I was just
going
to mention that. I'm so excited for that. We're doing the Hockey Kicks Cancer annual kickball tournament. We got a good squad.
It's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. We got beautiful Brian Blystone anchoring our team.
For the second year in a row, my wife will not let me do what I want to do when it comes to getting ready for Hockey Kicks Cancer.
Hmm.
Last year I presented her with the idea, and this year she is also not open to me getting a full-on mullet and a pervy mustache and dressing in an all-velour jumpsuit.
Hmm.
She won't let me do it. And I just think that would be the greatest costume ever for Hockey Kicks Cancer.
Well, my question for you and to anyone listening, so for the Toons universe and the Chucks Chasers, should I show up dressed as a hot dog or dressed as a banana? I have both. The choice is yours.
I would prefer you dressed up like a hot dog, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Because Hockey Kicks Cancer.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have a bunch of Pittsburgh hockey bloggers there.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil Kessel is in the news for hot dogs.
Maybe I should buy a Phil Kessel jersey and wear it over the hot dog uniform.
Phil Kessel jersey in a hot dog costume would likely be the best thing to ever happen to Hockey Kicks Cancer outside of actually being able to help people and help the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society of Allegheny County.
Sounds like I have some work to do then.
I believe that you do.
Ah.
So if you are interested in Hockey Kicks Cancer, while we continue to blather on about it, because cancer sucks, people. It just does.
It's the worst.
If you would like the help, whether or not you're into hockey or not, it doesn't matter. Go to toonshow.com. If you scroll down, right smack dab in the middle of the page, you will find the Hockey Kicks Cancer logo from last year. It's right there. You click on it. That's the link to HockeyKicksCancer.com. And make a donation, even if it's like $2.
Yeah.
What's $2?
What's $2 to you? Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
Nothing.
But it can mean all the difference in the world to somebody.
Yes.
And that's the point. So do that, by all means. Do it for Daddy. Tell me that you did it online.
And if you don't, I'm going to assume you like cancer and judge you accordingly.
Yeah.
No one likes cancer.
Nobody, no. But just do that. Give it a check out. We'll get Stevie on the line at some point, maybe the next week or two, to discuss Hockey Kicks Cancer and some of the fun stuff that we'll have, because she's huge into video games as well.
Yes, she is.
So, by all means, check that out, HockeyKicksCancer.com or ToonShow.com, and scroll down and just click the link. Easy peasy pudding pie. You can find me on Twitter at ToonsBrian, or you can go to Facebook.com/ToonShow to get all the latest fun articles and commentary and fun stuff like that from myself, Ryan, Paul, Jack. I believe we're all actually on there and able to post.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Constructs Nunchucks, follow them on Facebook as well. But that's pretty much going to do it. You can follow the show here specifically at Toon Show. Just go to toonshow.com. Go under the Be a Loony tab.
Yeah.
I believe it says Be a Loony. And we'll put all the information. I actually have to add you guys onto the contact list.
Cool.
I thought I did, but apparently I didn't.
Oh. No, I'm sad.
But that'll take me literally 10 seconds. I just have to find the time to do it.
And stay off my website. Don't go there. Just leave me alone on the internet. I don't want anyone. Stay off my website. We have enough traffic without you. I don't want you looking at any of my work. And that's how I'm going to leave it. Stay away.
Yeah. We definitely want to hear from you. That's all that we can say for 100% certainty.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's you want to talk to Toons or whether you want to talk to Construct Nunchucks, it all falls under Toons Chucks
yep.
now.
Toons
Chucks. Which is still kind of fun to say.
It is.
Toons Chucks. So by all means, hit us up. Hashtag AskToons. We'll address your questions. No matter how absurd, bizarre, Japanese your question is, we will try to address it here on Toons Chucks, part of the Trending Topics Network, where you can find us and all the great shows, which include shows about wrestling, movies, wine and drinking, and vaginas, and things like that.
Love them all.
Every possible kind of show you want to find outside of maybe medical advice, and even some medical advice,
we gave some today,
as found
yeah.
on this show, you can find on the Trending Topics Network at TrendingTopicsNetwork.com. So on behalf of Paul and Ryan and Jack, my name's Brian, and we're going to call that a show. Here comes some yams.